Live from Burbank, California, the Winded City, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he hates his body. Mark Maron.
Man, now they're getting personal. I understand. Yeah, I'd like to crawl out of my body. I would. I wish I was like one of those worms or something where I could effluviate. Is that the word where you effluviate? You just leave your body along the side of the road like a carcass, effluviate. Grow wings and split?
No, exfoliate.
No, effluviate is the word I'm looking for. I believe that is the correct word. Effluvium being the carcass you leave on the ground when you leave winged and go elsewhere. That's what I'm going to do, Jim.
Well, why don't we ask our next guest?
Well, maybe he'll know. But let's set up the show. How are you, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor? Welcome aboard, lurking conservatives. Once again, we're honoring the borderline non-political theme of our agenda here at the Mark Maron Show. That's not true. We will get to some politics in a little while. I will talk a little bit about Rumsfeld and about Tom Cruise. I got to talk about this. I mean, I don't want to do morning show fodder, but this guy, he's selfish, man. He's a very selfish person. Apparently, he has said that he is going to. I'm going to quote him. He said, "Quote: I'm going to eat the placenta. I thought that would be good, very nutritious." About his kid, who he's about to have with Katie.
Very selfish.
Is it selfish? Because that's what she has the first dibs on eating the placenta.
What about us? What about his fans?
The women are the ones that are supposed to eat the placenta. It is nutritious. It's an old Indian thing, I believe, and it's not unusual for women to just take it home, throw it in the freezer, cook it into some chili or something. But this guy, jumping the gun, says, to hell with her. What a disrespectful bastard. He's going to eat the placenta right in front of her, he claims, in the delivery room, and not even give her a shot at it.
Well, that is just a great, wonderful, lovely image.
It's a way to open a show. It's a way to open an evening show, Truth Seekers. Do you understand what I'm saying to you?
I still have part of my placenta.
Yeah. I don't have my appendix anymore. That was weird. That's a good way to intro our next guest. I had an awkward, right when my family moved, I had pains in my stomach. My father's a physician. We moved to New Mexico from Alaska, which is not necessarily that important to the story. But I had pains in my stomach, so of course my father, being the hyperactive, worrying physician that he was at the time, immediately assumed it was appendicitis. But he couldn't confirm it. And I don't know if you know. I really think right now I'm talking about malpractice. A bordering on rape story, because to examine. For appendicitis, yeah, you have to get a proctological examination. And I don't know if fathers are supposed to do that, but that's what happened. But it wasn't enough. He called some doctor he barely knew to come over and do it as well, right there in our house. This is an awkward situation, Jim. And then next thing I know, 3 days later, I'm in the hospital getting my appendix removed.
And there's a videotape going around.
I think I'm going to cry. I'm so glad I got this out. I was repressing this stuff, man. I really was. Let's do this. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. President Bush today refused to rule out nuclear strikes against Iran if diplomacy fails to curb their atomic ambitions. This is a horrible idea. Remember Japan, people, World War II, the huge explosion, the Godzilla population? There are repercussions to this sort of thing, my friends. I sold that one. George Ryan, the former Republican governor of Illinois, who drew international notice by declaring a moratorium on the death penalty in his state, has been convicted in a sweeping federal corruption case. Racketeering conspiracy, mail fraud, tax fraud, lying to the FBI. Sounds like somebody wants to be president. The state of Texas is halting its program of arresting drunks in bars. Activists realized the law was creating problems when they noticed sober college girls were not responding to their traditional mating call of, "Hey, show us your tits! Come on! Show them! Let's see them! Come on! Come on!"
Selling that one, too.
Dude, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Oh, yeah.
That's the short order news for tonight. And we'll do another one later on. I'm not going to read emails. We've got guests. We got things to do. Now I feel a little awkward about sharing that story about my dad and my appendix blowing up. But it didn't. I just ended up in the hospital. I got my appendix removed, and I read a book about Hitler. I think this is bringing me back into a line of questioning that I'm going to engage in with Alan. So Alan McDonald started out like most of us, just an adolescent perv looking at whatever skin mags he could get his hands on. He later went on to help define the L.A. punk scene with his writing for Slash Magazine and other publications. Then Alan McDonald found himself working as assistant proofreader over at Hustler Magazine, and from there became one of the magazine's most prolific contributors, and then onward and upward to overseeing all editorial content in Hustler Magazine as editorial director. He's out now. He was fired. And his new book, Prisoner of X, 20 Years in the Hole at Hustler Magazine, is great. How are you, Alan?
I'm pretty good, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming down. I love the opening of the book because when we were kids, I think you're a little older than me, but not much. It was so much harder to find porn, man. I've talked about this before. You had to have, you really set the whole scene of being an adolescent perv, which I guess we all were, where you had to have that one guy who had a brother or a father, or you had to find the box of porn.
You had to be a sneak. You had to be like an ambitious little sneak, and you had to go through your dad's stuff.
Yeah.
You had to know where to look.
Yeah.
You had to figure, where is he going to hide the good stuff, and then just dig until you found it.
Do you remember the first time you found actual hardcore porn, and you were like, oh my God!
I actually found it on the street. I found some playing cards of hardcore porn, and I was kind of shocked. I couldn't tell what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, you,
I thought someone was being stabbed. I thought it was pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of made me not want to do it.
Yeah, it did.
For about 15 minutes, and I got over my reluctance. Believe me,
it made me feel like I had no idea how to do it. I knew that there was a way to do it, but I
also thought there was way too much hair.
Yeah.
Like, way too much hair on everybody. I thought, where do they get all that hair?
That changed, though. Now there's very little hair.
Yeah. I'm talking about the men.
There's also, sometimes you watch those porn movies from the 60s, and it's just like, it's literally like the Discovery Channel. So now, when you got over there to Hustler, obviously, we can't talk about everything, but you came up in the L.A. punk scene, and you get over to Hustler Magazine. What were your expectations? Did you think it was going to be cool?
I thought it would be a lot of fun. I thought there'd be, like, drugs everywhere. I thought there'd be people having sex in their offices. I thought that the boss would be insane.
Yeah.
And all this was true. It was all, like, just like that.
Yeah. So what were the first things? Like, you get there, like, the first day of work, and did you meet Flint right away?
No, I didn't see. Flint wasn't around when I first got there. I saw him the day I went for my interview. He rolled through.
Uh-huh.
And at this point, he was in some kind of, like, sort of, like, drug state.
Yeah.
He was in various drug states at various times. And he just, like, looked at me with, like, one eye. And it just terrified me. I felt like I was in a horror movie and I was trying to hide from the monster. But I was very intrigued also because he has his charisma and I wanted to be part of it. You know, I wanted to get in there.
Yeah, did you find him, I mean, did you find the whole, see, I have this weird thing with pornography and thinking about sex because, I have to admit, I'm somewhat, I don't know if I'm perverted, but I think about sex constantly. I have since I was a kid.
Yeah, I don't see anything.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. It's never ending.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, I'm not going to disclaim the fact that I do engage in viewing pornography. Now, when you got there, it was a different time, kind of. It seems to me that somewhat of a door closed culturally in how, certainly liberals approach porn. It used to be very important to culture.
Well, this is like the mid-80s, and so it was switching over to video.
So it's starting to blow up a little bit.
Oh, it was getting huge. But the thing is, like, when porn not first started, but in the 60s,
yeah.
Early 70s,
yeah.
They were making these movies, and the people who were making the movies actually thought they were revolutionaries. They thought they were making
right.
a cultural statement.
Right. That was
now they were just making profits, and they're making huge profits.
They
sold a lot of VCRs.
Right. Porn is like, it makes billions of dollars. I mean, I guess that's what I'm talking about, is that in the early 70s and late 60s, the whole element of sexual liberation and pornography even was part of the whole progressive dialogue in
right.
terms of First Amendment
right.
stuff. I mean, that was, they were like, they thought they were warriors.
Well, when we were in there, all of a sudden you had like this, the way the academics went with all this feminist studies and stuff, all of a sudden porn was taking advantage of women, degrading women, and it was a thing that you should feel ashamed to be engaged in. That never penetrated to me, though, that attitude, that particular attitude.
It never even registered, really?
No, I saw it with other people, and I'd always think, what's wrong with them? And
right.
I would always assume they were gay, and a lot of times they were gay, not to, to
sure.
disparage that, but a lot of times they were gay, and they would join in with this this political movement. It would give them like some kind of unity. But
so
now there's a whole batch of women who are porn-friendly feminists.
Yeah.
And they've kind of rejected like the Andrea Dworkin types and the Kathy McKinnon types, the whole anti-sex types. Because
right.
it wasn't just that they were against pornography, they really were against sex. They had some kind of aversion to sex, especially this Andrea Dworkin.
And
more women today are more open. I mean, they're empowered. But one thing about feminism is it has given them a sense where they do own their own libido. And They exercise it.
And did you ever find at all that when you were working at Hustler, I mean, for 20 years, and you were at a point where you were overseeing all editorial content?
Mm-hmm. For several magazines, by the way, not just Hustler.
For
Barely Legal Magazine, Taboo Magazine, Chic Magazine, Busted Beauties, Hustler Erotic Video Guide, Asian Fever, Brown Sugar.
So did you even register? I mean, when you see is there any way you can look at a picture of a naked woman or a close-up of a naked woman that registers at all, other than like, maybe you had to trim that?
You know, it's pretty funny. It's like certain girls will. I mean, it just cuts straight through any kind of professional veneer you have.
Oh, yeah?
And it's just like back to when you were 12, and you say, wow. This girl is great.
Isn't that great?
I'd like to know her.
That's a great experience.
And then
I got to ask you, in terms of like overseeing that much. See, I never bought Hustler because there was something about just the high contrast color of the pages and the thickness of it. I never was a big Hustler reader. Mm-hmm. I grew to appreciate some of the humor because it was so crass that I found it kind of funny. Was there ever a moment where you said like, "Yeah, we can't do this"?
Generally, whenever we had that feeling, we knew we had to do it. It's like we had an agreement with each other where if we came up with something that would just appall us, we had to do it. Like the lady died, like when Lady Diana died.
Yeah.
We had just run a thing on her being it was a parody of a potato chip. It was some kind of thing about her being a bulimic.
Yeah.
And so we ran that, and then she died while that was at the printer. So that was pretty shameful.
Yeah.
But then when we're mourning that, a guy had an idea that if she had had big implants, when she crashed, it might have saved her life.
Right.
So naturally, we had to work that parody up, and we ran that.
Yeah.
But when we thought of it, we were just ashamed. We were ashamed that we would think of that, but then it had to go.
Yeah, you had to do it. Did you just live with the shame, or just evolved? It went away.
It never goes away.
Oh, great. Well, we're talking.
Look at me.
Yeah. We're talking to Alan McDonald. The book is Prisoner of X, 20 Years in the Hole at Hustler Magazine. We'll continue this conversation because it's important, people. Now he serves at the pleasure of the president, Mark Maron. Thank you, Jim. Our guest is Alan McDonald. The book is Prisoner of X, 20 Years in the Hole at Hustler Magazine. Now, okay, let's just get right into the Hustler thing. I begrudgingly respect Larry Flynt for doing some things. Is that true?
I respect him. I have a lot of... I love Larry Flynt.
You do?
Yeah.
And that's what got you into trouble.
He thinks I'm bitter against him because I've heard him quoted a couple times saying that I'm bitter, but I have nothing against him.
Because he fired you.
Well, no, I don't mind being fired, but he stiffed me on my severance. And that was, that's a sticking point. But other than that, he treated me really well. I got to do whatever I wanted for 20 years, and he paid me pretty well, and I got to hire everyone I wanted, and I met a lot of people I never would have met otherwise. And plus, I really liked my relationship with Larry. I had a great time with Larry many times. He's very charismatic.
Yeah,
Very nice guy.
Not a nice guy, but you know.
He's a nice guy, like Tony Soprano's a nice guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to be part of the devil's minion.
It's great. It's kind of like I watched The Sopranos. It's not that I've been in that particular milieu, but I've been in a similar one, and it's sort of like I never want to go to jail. I don't want to actually be a criminal,
right?
But I'm very attracted to that kind of behavior.
No,
and the
I
fact
am.
That this semi illicit kind of endeavor. Very attractive to me.
I feel the same way. I mean, I spent a lot of time with some people in the 80s that were like that. I spent a lot of time with Kenison when I was a kid, when I was like 21 or 22. And we have that sort of menacing, chaotic possibility of like, I don't know what the hell's going to happen here. And somebody who exudes that much charisma, it is kind of fun to be part of it, to be part of that momentum. A lot of people get lost in that, though. I imagine you saw some casualties over there at Hustler.
Not necessarily at Hustler, but in the surrounding areas, in porn, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the what are your outstanding memories? Like I know they're in the book, but in terms of some of the freedoms that you were able to indulge in over there at Hustler, that it stand out in your mind is like that was a great time.
Well, one thing is like I can't believe that I haven't been cursing yet because you could talk any way you wanted to there.
Yeah.
And like all the time, no matter who was around, you could say anything, any word you wanted.
Yeah.
And you could string them together.
In the workplace.
Oh, yeah, constantly.
Yeah.
And like I kind of, I have friends with corporate jobs, and they don't have that freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of miss it right now because I'd like to just like spew them off, you know. But I'm restraining myself.
You can if you bleep them.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
But like, what were some of the things that you did? Like, there's a story about flying to a XXX event of some kind.
Well, I got sent to France three or four times, yeah, to cover like the Cannes Film Festival of Porn.
Oh, they have that?
Yeah. It's similar. Like, what it was is this magazine called Hot Video, and they wanted to have an award show, and so they held it at the same time as the Cannes Film Festival in the same location.
Uh-huh.
And then they were just, all the paparazzi's there, the whole world media's there, and then they would just kind of siphon it off. They dressed some chick up. First time it was Sandra Scream.
Uh-huh.
And they dressed her up in some really hot outfit, and they'd walk her through the crowds, and all the media would just switch to Sandra Scream and follow her.
Uh-huh.
I remember one time I got off a boat, and I was walking like four or five porn girls, and Spike Lee was being interviewed.
Yeah.
And he had a whole crowd of you know, photographers, yeah, and reporters, and they just followed us. And all of a sudden, he was there by himself.
See you, Spike. The power of sex.
People love it.
Do you find, you know, it's weird because, you know, being that we're on this type of network that is progressive as liberal, that you know you're going to have people out there in the audience judging heavily in terms of what porn is or what porn means.
Well, they can judge Larry all they want, but, you know, like when Clinton was being impeached,
right?
Larry did more than any liberal, Larry did more than any progressive to slow down that process and to put some sanity into it.
Yeah, yeah.
To put some perspective into it.
He said he had a couple of guys taken out, kind of, didn't he?
Well, what he did is he ran an ad in the Washington Post, and he said, anybody who's had sex with a congressman or a high government official, I'll give you money for this story.
Uh-huh.
And then we got a lot of leads on that, and the guy named Bob Livingston, he resigned because we acted like we had something on him. We actually had nothing on him.
And he was a speaker, right?
He was the speaker-elect. He was due to be appointed Speaker of the House.
Uh-huh.
So he would have been third
man
in line of presidency. He had resigned.
Thanks to Larry Flint.
Yeah. Well, thanks to me, I would say. But
was it you?
Well, me and Larry. I mean, if it hadn't been for Larry's ad, it never would have happened.
Uh-huh.
But like, I got a phone call from a guy at Roll Call magazine, and he said, "We hear you're pursuing Livingston," and I said, "Well, we actually had nothing in Livingston,
yeah,
at all." And I said, "Well, the confidentiality agreements haven't been signed yet, so I can't tell you anything."
Right.
And then he goes, "I'm going with the story." He approached Livingston, and Livingston did a preemptive confession.
Oh, all right. So that was it. I find it fascinating because I'm always. I go in and out of being conflicted about porn, but yet I should just accept it, right, Alan?
I don't have any conflict about it. I mean, I think of it as a service.
Well, yeah, let's continue that thought. Let's take one more. We're going to take one more break, and we'll talk to you for a few more minutes because I still feel like I haven't gotten to the meat of it. You know what I mean? We're talking to Alan McDonald. The book is Prisoner of X, 20 Years in the Hole at Hustler Magazine.
Patient zero for mad cow disease, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Man, this is going to be it's going to be an entire show about porn, my friends. How do you like that? Finally on Air America, an hour about porn.
It's a big part of your life.
Alan McDonald, it's not a big part.
Okay, it's a small part of your life.
You self-righteous bastard, you're doing it again, aren't you?
It's a huge part of your life.
You're doing it again, aren't you?
It's a part of your life.
Yeah, you're probably a guy.
What?
You're
what
probably
I say wrong
a guy.
Now? You're it's a big part of everybody's life.
Oh, that's different. We're talking
yours especially.
We're talking to Alan McDonald. His book, Prisoner of X, 20 Years in the Hole at Hustler Magazine, is it's right here in front of me. It's got a Daniel Klaus cover. It's very nice. Nice book. We'll put a link to it. I got a link to Feral House, which is the publisher, but you say if you go to Amazon, they can get it now.
You can get
and
it
there's a discount.
Yeah, yeah, it's cheap on Amazon. You can get two.
Do you ever look at porn?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank God. Thank God we got that out of the way.
I prefer to call it naked pictures of women.
Okay, that's fine.
Why put that horrible connotation of porn on it like it's something bad usually?
Well, here's,
it isn't.
Here's the dilemma I have, Alan. If I ever have a dilemma about porn, it's just that I know on some level in my head that I sometimes feel a little bad For the women, and I feel bad for myself looking at them sometimes, and I feel my friend Louie once put it well when I rent a porn movie. He says, what do you want to spend your afternoon watching losers have sex for? Now, and I don't know, I don't quite buy into the fact that they're victims necessarily, but what do you make of that? Am I just overreacting? Am I being sensitive?
Probably not. I feel bad for all the mooks who are like who strung out on porn, like all these mooks who like kind of like follow these girls around or like dependent on them, and they've never even seen them.
Right.
That's where the real pity should come in. I mean, the girls have some power. The sexual allure of the female is very, very strong.
Yeah.
Whereas these guys, the guys are more powerless. The guys, they can't stop themselves. I mean, probably someone nearby could attest to that.
Yeah. I know it's an addictive substance. I mean, it is an addictive substance.
Well, I don't know about that because, you know, I was around it for 20 years and I haven't looked at it since I got fired.
Really?
Well, I saw this one video about 2 months ago because some guy was giving me a bunch of videos I was trading away. And it was Joanna Storm. It was a Joanna Storm video. She's a woman, by the way.
Yeah.
And she produces it. She directed it. And it was terrific.
Yeah?
Really great. Yeah, the girls, they all had that kind of suicide girl vibe with the tattoos. Uh-huh. And they had natural, unenhanced voluptuousness.
Yeah.
And they were very avid about their participation in the sex. And it was terrific.
Well, let's talk a
really
little bit.
Really terrific. Like, I would say, Joanna Storm, I'm your biggest fan.
If I was still at Hustler, you would be
every month you would be featured with the fully erect rating.
Okay.
Every month.
All right. Well, if they're listening,
probably between months.
All right. Well, if she's listening to this show,
porn is not addictive at all.
No, it's not.
No.
I don't know if that's true. Yeah, you really think that? I think ultimately.
Yeah, I think it's not. It's not any more addictive than reading.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so. I hear, you know, people say, well, porn is destroying relationships, and these men, if they didn't have porn, they would go and have a relationship. But what kind of relationship would they have?
Right.
They would have some messed up relationship with some woman who was also messed up, and maybe they would have a kid.
Yeah.
And then they'd have this kid who'd have them for parents, and it would be a very
disastrous.
Disastrous.
It's
family.
Better the guy's just out in the
it's
garage.
It's better the guy's just on his own doing this stuff. Yeah.
I just think that
it's a great thing for like between relationships. Yeah. I've known some drug addicts, and when they get clean, they're really not suitable for human companionship. And they just make do with porn. It's not only convenient, it's humanitarian, and it's safer on everybody involved, and especially the people who don't get involved in it. And it's a blessing to them.
Porn is helping people.
It
Alan
helps
McDonald.
Women. It helps women
keep those guys away
keeps
from draining
away.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were you going
to
say, Jim?
I was just saying, if you're addicted to porn and reading, they'd, you know, have a lot of messy books.
There you go. See that? So now let's get back to the political element. I just want to talk about this guy Livingston a little more because he's still in the game, right?
Well, he's a lobbyist now. He's one of the biggest lobbyists in Washington,
D.C. This is the guy that you helped, you and Larry Flynt and you pushed him out from being the Speaker of the House.
Well, what happened is when we bluffed that we had something on him.
Right.
And his initial reaction was, well, I've never lied about this under oath.
Yeah.
And I never would.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to stay in office. I'm going to assume the chair. I'm going to assume the chairmanship of whatever they call it.
Right.
I'm going to assume the Speaker's chair. And so then, like, the next day, a news crew came to interview me for, it was one of the major networks.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, you know, our Washington Bureau tells us that Livingston is having sex with lobbyists.
Right.
And so when they got me on camera, I said, we're aggressively pursuing indications that Livingston is having sex with lobbyists. And then the next day, he had changed his mind, and he resigned. And his wife called Larry up and begged Larry not to divulge any more details.
Wow.
And Larry agreed, since, of course, we had no details. And so that made Larry look like a good guy. And then Livingston caving, it legitimized us. So then we could make any kind of wild claim after that. And people had to consider it seriously as though we really had something, because Livingston had made it seem as though we had something.
You got to love that about Larry Flynt. You got to love that sort of prankster mode of operating. That's amazing.
Also the poker deal.
Yeah, like, what's that?
He just knows how to bluff. He knows how to play poker.
He gets off on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, when this guy initially called me from roll call, my thought was, what would Larry do?
Right.
And that's how I was able to bluff that guy out. That's how I was able to act as though we really had something in our roll card.
You think he's got anything up his sleeve for this election? You think he's got things going on? You think he's going to take down some politicians?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we tried to get George Bush before that election.
Yeah.
Before the 2000 election. We sent a couple guys down to Texas to try and dig up whatever they could about Bush's youthful indiscretions. And
it's around, though. That one guy who wrote Fortunate Son, that author, now his name is eluding me, I think he was a little... He might have been
Well, I think he wanted to meet our guys, and he wanted to drive. He wanted to go out in the middle of a lake in a canoe with them, and they did meet him, and he might have been a little bit off his rocker.
The guy who wrote that book?
Yeah, he might have been a little bit off his rocker.
But I think there is proof that Bush was busted and did do community service for Blow.
There's indications that there was things going on, and also he was evasive when directly questioned about it.
About Blow.
Yeah. Which I think is a very legitimate question, because you'd want to ask him, well, if you had been if you had been caught with it, and you had been sentenced to prison like a regular person would have, how would that have made you a better president today?
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of question you want to ask them.
I don't know why people don't just admit to that stuff. I don't.
They want to get elected.
I guess. But for me, it's like, I guess I'm completely different from somebody else.
You don't have anything to lose. You can admit to anything. Almost anything.
Yeah.
And you really don't have anything to lose.
I know. But I think that if somebody, like a politician said, yeah, I did that. Who didn't? Why wouldn't you vote for that guy? I did drugs.
Maybe I would, maybe you would, but the vast majority of Americans
perhaps
would not.
I guess you're right. I guess I'm being idealistic to expect honesty from politicians.
Throughout American history have been, copying the things like that, though, and would be get reelected and elected. Yeah,
who?
In the 19th century.
Look in Louisiana. It happens a lot.
Are you talking about exactly?
Well, there was a guy in Louisiana. He said, you'd have to catch me with a dead girl or a live boy for me not to get reelected here.
Right. Well, that's Louisiana. I mean, Louisiana's a reputation of political corruption and anything goes. But, all right, so let's, in all your experience with Larry Flynt, do you think that he has changed culture in a positive way? Do you think that he is a champion of the First Amendment? Do you think he's a plus to American civilization?
Well, I don't know about the big framework of that about changing culture, but I think he's a plus. I think he's a voice that he deserves to be heard, and he speaks for some people who aren't heard. And whether or not his motivation is entirely to protect the First Amendment or to enrich himself, I mean, it's a mixed motivation, and he'll admit that. He's the first to admit that. But he is out there doing stuff. He did take that Falwell case all the way to the Supreme Court. It cost him a lot of money. He could have settled for a lot less money way earlier, but he chose to fight it all the way. And that's kind of like a cussedness that he has. Like he's a tough guy, and he doesn't like to back down. Once someone picks a fight with him, he'll take it all the way. He's got there is a certain integrity to him, even though he does like waffle and a lot of stuff. There's a certain integrity to him that without that, it would be a poorer country.
Right. So what do you got going on now? You're gonna do a book tour. You're probably gonna do a lot of the dirty shows.
Some of them. Hopefully, I'm scheduled to do Howard Stern a week from this Saturday, this Wednesday.
I think the book is, if anybody's a fan of, like Hunter S. Thompson, William Burroughs, and all the great writers of the 60s, and just the spirit of exciting filth dirty memoir.
It's also heartfelt. There's some touching moments. You may weep a little bit.
Yeah, I cried a little bit, too.
Your heartstrings will be tugged.
I cried a little bit when a young Alan McDonald was beat up by a 14-year-old girl. When he was a kid, I cried. You're only eight.
You make it sound like I was like 18 or something, but I was only eight.
All right, well, he was 8 years old, so it was sad.
But I've thought about that many times since, and found it somewhat arousing. So
you did.
You can turn your sad moments into positives.
I sometimes wish, honestly, I wish that, don't you? I guess it's sort of my own addictive brain, but just that feeling from when you were like 13 and you first started having those feelings about dirty books and girls and everything. Don't you wish that it would just come back in that pure form?
It really hasn't gone away.
Really? It's still that pure? I mean, I still have it, but I think it's a little jaded.
You know, I don't want to be jaded, so I don't let it get jaded. I tell you, I'll go somewhere, and when there's girls around and they give me a little attention, I get as excited as I did when I was 13.
I get excited.
I'm still I get tongue tied. I'm still as much of a retard as I was when I was 13.
I think I am too. I
and
do.
They find that charming.
Yeah. What I'm really thinking about is like the first time you realize that you could actually have an orgasm.
That kind of like weirded me out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because what the hell is that stuff?
Yeah. And also just like, oh my God, am I dying? And then you're like, no, this is the best thing ever.
I didn't get to the best thing ever until like maybe the fourth or fifth time.
Yeah, it was still frightening.
It was a little odd.
Yeah,
what is this stuff coming on?
I know.
And plus, when I was a kid, like there's this whole thing about, I mean, I don't know, maybe you had your orgasm with someone else, but when I was a kid.
I had it with the bath, with the faucet.
Yeah, see, when I was a kid, there's this thing about if you were masturbating, it was like frowned upon.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was frowned upon. I know I wasn't proud of it. I didn't do it in the living room.
But the other kids would mock, kids as being they had various terms that they used.
Really?
Yeah.
I was just so I was so thrilled that I could do that and no one could stop me, and it was completely in my control. It was tremendously empowering and remains that way.
Once I got the hang of it, believe me.
Yeah. What, are you kidding?
Yeah. No, it's the best thing ever.
Yeah. If I could pull back from it now, I think I'd be further along. I think it's really stifled my emotional and professional growth. Because it's a go-to thing, when you're in the middle, when you're sort of like, hey, I could either do this writing and do this work, or I could freak out and masturbate, and I generally opt for the second. You? Well, you wrote a book. You just wrote a whole book.
Yeah, I got to do some work.
Well, good for you. So maybe with age that'll happen for me as well.
What's this age thing? You're always throwing this age thing in.
It's not an age thing. I see you as a wiser person.
This is the third time he's mentioned it.
Well, how old are you?
Why?
No, I'm just curious. I'm not saying...
I turned 50 in February. I just turned 50.
I just turned 42, so I'm hoping that when I'm 50, I will be able to finish things as opposed to masturbate in the middle.
I see you as a very accomplished human being.
Well, thank you very much, and I see you as that as well. And I think everybody should buy Prisoner of X, 20 Years in the Hole at Hustler Magazine, because it's touching, it's dirty.
And it's funny.
And it's really funny. Thanks, Alan McDonald. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Coming up next, Mark tries to perform math with our own Inside the Beltway oddsmaker, Johnny K Street. Now he's an unlikely source of vitamin D, Mark Maron.
I just read that story. What was that? It's mushrooms, right? Was it mushrooms?
Yeah, mushrooms.
An unlikely source of vitamin D, mushrooms.
Yes.
Man, I think that entire interview with Alan McDonald is a gateway for us. I think we're taking the show a different direction.
I think we should explore our sexuality even more, you and I.
Well, I'm going to get undressed in just a second, but we got a special guest, man. This is exciting. He's out here on business, so let's let it rip. There are a lot of big stories in the news this week, so let's get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway oddsmaker, Johnny K Street, in the house. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby, all the way to L.A.
All right.
All right, what could I possibly be taking action on today? Let's see. I knew there was something to do. Hold on. It's coming to me. Oh, yeah, that's right. The apocalypse!
What?
Have you heard, Mark? The world is about to end.
Yeah?
That coke and alcohol-addled brain of our moron-in-chief has finally broken down completely. Now Bush wants to nuke Iran.
All right, so wait, Johnny, you think Bush is falling off the wagon then?
He's not only falling off the wagon, he's getting dragged face down behind it. This is the most insane thing Bush has done since the last insane thing he's done.
Yeah.
And there's too many to keep track of. I'm giving 50 to 1 if you gave Bush a blood test, it would come out dirtier than Whitney Houston's.
I think you might be onto something, Johnny. Put me down for 100 on that.
You are down.
So, hey, buddy, what are the odds that Bush is trying to intimidate Iran and it's all just a big bluff?
Amarillo Slim couldn't bluff that good. If you're betting that Bush is going to do something idiotic, it's like finding money in the street. I'm giving 100 to 1 Bush is going to light up Iran like a barbecue at Crawford Ranch. And why? He thinks he's doing God's work. Let me tell you something.
All right.
Just because you have wood for the rapture, it doesn't mean you have to cause it yourself.
Exactly.
If George Bush is in a big hurry to spend eternity with a higher power, I'll help him pack and drive him to the airport myself, and I'm not going with him.
Yeah.
The end time to me is when they close the betting window at the track. Whoever thought the four horsemen of the apocalypse would look like Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Rice? Okay, maybe Rice. I'm not ready for the world to end. I have tickets for Jerry Vale, New Year's Eve in Atlantic City.
Yeah.
Hey, I get it.
All right.
I've seen the wives some of these fundamentalist guys have. I'd want to kill myself, too.
Yeah.
These women are so uptight, they make Ann Coulter look like Courtney Love.
Yeah.
When your whole life revolves around going to church every day, in between bombing abortion clinics, attacking gay people, Republican fundraising, right, and watching NASCAR races, I wouldn't be afraid of death either. I just wouldn't take the whole country with me.
All right, man. You convinced me, Johnny. World War III is right around the corner. I'm down for a grand.
You are down, and you can spend your winnings on water that hasn't been contaminated by radiation and guns to fight off the gangs during the food riots.
Right, right.
And if there's anybody out there who doesn't think Bush is going to nuke Iran, why would he be setting off a 700-ton bomb in Nevada to simulate an underground nuclear explosion? Nevada, not far from Las Vegas itself. Right. I never liked Bush's policies, but now it's personal. They're going to dig a hole, drop in 1.10 million pounds of explosives and set it off? Yeah, that shouldn't cause any problems. Let me put it this way. Not a great day to check into the penthouse at the Sands.
That's right.
I'm not a scientist, but my apartment shakes when the bus drives by.
Right. Well, what kind of action do you have on Rumsfeld being replaced?
That's a tricky bet. It could go either way.
Right.
Everyone, including Dick Cheney and George Bush, knows that Rumsfeld doesn't know what he's doing. Uh-huh. I haven't seen anyone screw up something like that since they gave David Lee Roth a radio show.
No kidding.
No one could have predicted that one of the biggest threats to the troops in Iraq would be our Secretary of Defense.
Right.
I haven't seen this many American generals come out against someone since the Nuremberg trials.
So. Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, Nuremberg trials. You got it, Johnny.
Rumsfeld policy is don't ask, don't know.
Yeah.
But seeing as how George Bush has completely lost his mind, I have to lean towards Rumsfeld staying right where he is, which is thousands of miles away from the actual war and completely removed from reality.
All right, that sounds like a sound bet. I'm down for 500, my friend.
Beautiful. Consider it a gift.
All right.
Before I leave, I just want to get a small plug, if I may, for my annual Johnny K. Spring into Summer Casino Night at the Sons of Italy Hall in Paramus.
Okay.
Half of my proceeds will be going towards funding a fallout shelter. Construction to start immediately.
Okay.
I'm out of here. I got a lunch with Tarantino.
All right, buddy. Thanks for stopping by, Johnny. That's a good old Johnny K. Street. It's nice to have him out. You know, he's dressed for L.A. Looks good with the a Madras shirt he was wearing? What do you call that? What do you call those shirts? A Hawaiian shirt. What am I, stupid? It's a Hawaiian shirt he was wearing.
Hawaiian shirt, yeah.
Yeah. In all honesty, I listen to the network. I listen to the anger of progressives. I understand the anger of progressives. You know, but it's really sad to me is that not only is Bush the decider, as he proclaimed himself today, in terms of whether Rumsfeld stays or not, but it seems to me, as time goes on, that these guys are doing exactly what they want to. And any sort of American, whatever murders or whatever deaths are guilty for in terms of the soldiers in Iraq and in terms of Iraqi civilians and Iraqi people, this is just part of their bottom line. They're building an embassy there, apparently, that is as big as a city, a U.S. embassy. They're building a base there that is like a fortified fortress. This is exactly what the neocon death cult was planning. This is exactly where they were going with this. And there's nothing, it seems, on some level. Now, I'm not talking about getting the information out there or responding with anger, but it seems that until we can tilt the balance in the government, it doesn't seem like the people can do much of anything. We can sit here all we want and call them liars and call them guilty of murder, guilty of treason, guilty of whatever it is. But these guys are shameless and they don't care. They're just going to go ahead and let this happen and see how it ends up in the in terms of 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line. That's what they're banking on.
Well, I know of one way we can stop it now.
How?
Overthrow the government.
Yes.
I'm not saying that.
Yes. Let's do that. Maria Bamford's coming in here in a minute. Kevin Kataoka's here. We can start with the four of us, and we'll figure it out right here tonight how we're going to overthrow the government, Jim.
I'm not saying Air America, you know, backs that up. But
hold that thought. We're going. We're going away for a break.
And now he's funding a study on wombats. Mark Maron.
This is crazy, Jim. This show is crazy. Because you know, I just realized what I did. We spent a bunch of time talking to Alan McDonald about dirty stuff, which I thought was great. I enjoyed it. And then I get self-conscious, and in the middle, like, I knew I had 3 minutes after Johnny split to, like, sort of, like, I got to wedge some politics in here. It's like, yeah, Rumsfeld's bad, and Bush is an ass, and we should get rid of him, and they're ruining the world, and they should be put in jail, and, okay, now we're going to do some more comedy. The first, because I feel guilty when I just have a nice time and enjoy the conversations with people.
Yeah, I was
people.
Wondering what the hell was happening.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. I just gave you the...
I didn't want to say anything.
I let people in on the process too damn much, Jim. I let them know what I'm thinking. I'm still feeling guilty.
I didn't want to stop because I noticed you were masturbating while you were doing
that. Well, that's what we do here. That we're freeing I don't even know how to put it, but I used to say that. I used to do a whole bit about that. I used to have like a half an hour on masturbating in my act because it was that part, that much of my life. I used to do a bit about how I think people should be able to do it whenever. They should have masturbation stops along the highway. You should be able to do it at work if you're too stressed out. It's a built-in stress relief device, and this is not the conversation I want to have in front of Maria. This is not...
It's okay. It's a safe space.
Is it a safe space? So,
yeah.
Okay, well, let me introduce you, and then we don't have to continue it. I don't want
okay.
you to...
It's okay. Masturbation is healthy.
Exactly.
Unless it brings to avoidance behavior, when you like you stop paying your bills because you're too busy.
Being a monkey in a tree! All right. The first time I saw Maria Bamford, my friends, the first time I saw her do stand-up, yeah, I got that feeling that one gets when they're watching a totally unique talent. A special person. She's one of my favorite comedians, and she is one of the comedians of comedy in that lofty title with those arrogant alternative comedy kids making the big play for the big comedic territory. Maria Bamford is here.
Thank you for having me on your program. This is very exciting. I'm sad that I missed the masturbation hour.
It didn't really start focusing on that till the end, you know, because I don't know. We're comics. I said this the other night on stage. I said, I remember back when comedy was just a bunch of guys who smoked too much pot and masturbated and really couldn't do anything else.
Right.
You remember? There's still a few of the old school guys. But
You don't see them out much.
No,
what's
you don't.
What's happened to those
guys? Everybody's gotten so responsible, so MySpace-oriented, so self-promoting. I've never seen a comedy community. I've never seen the community do this, where people are actually being rewarded. Like, no matter how anyone feels about Dane Cook as a performer, and right. We don't need to slander. I don't need to be a player hater. But even the most, you know, renegade of comedic talents are like, dude, he knows how to self-promote though. Like, people are being rewarded. Like, that's part of your talent now. It's your ability to promote yourself.
Hasn't it always been though? I mean, isn't that always how it is? Like, historically speaking, that you know, you make the bigger sign.
But isn't it supposed to be for? Aren't you supposed to have people that do that for you? Maybe I'm missing the damn boat.
In the old days, yeah.
In the old days,
you had people do it for you.
Yeah, and you didn't have to pay for your own stage time.
This is a new concept. This British comedian I was talking to came out to Daniel Kitson. He says the less audience, the better. The better it is. The less people watching, the better it is. The more people watching, the less good it is.
Right.
Now, this is, of course, the definition of success that works for me.
Yeah.
Specifically.
I agree with that. My CD, I have not sold out, and still tickets available for a reason. I alienate people on purpose. Give me a half a house of people that really like me, that I can get intimate with and honest with, as opposed to a full house filled with half the crowd not really knowing why they're there. They're just like, are we here to see a clown? I hope the clown dances.
We got a fax so we could bring 20 of our friends.
Nobody has 20 friends. That's why comedy club shows are bad.
You were in Australia.
Yes, I was in Australia for 2 months. I did the Adelaide Fringe Festival. They have a spectacular festival circuit over there, and where comedy is done in theaters, which I enjoy that because I am do not have good social skills, and so the whole bantering back and forth party atmosphere of a comedy club is not that's not my thing always. So I liked doing that, and I went to Darwin and Alice Springs and Singapore.
Singapore?
Where it is a limiting dictatorship there where you can't criticize the government, but it's really nice, you guys.
It's like
great shopping, and it's clean.
And modern?
It's modern. And the neat thing is that there you don't see any poor people. I don't know if they're all being shipped in from Thailand and they have to be shipped out before the end of the day, and so you don't see them. The only people I saw being neglected were cats.
In Singapore,
the cats can fend for themselves.
I know. Yeah, if I was there, I'd be collecting them. I'd be like, I'll take you home. I have 4 feral cats in my house.
Oh.
I know, I'm a cat collector. So did you do that gig in Singapore?
I did Singapore. They have the Melbourne Comedy Festival sponsors rooms. They were going to do a show in Kuala Lumpur.
Mm.
It's fantastic. It's really nice because you travel with 3 other comedians, so you're not by yourself. It's magnificent.
Do you have any reflections on Australia?
Reflections are...
Were the audiences good?
Wonderful. And I would say very appreciative. And let me see. Is there anything that was negative? No. The one set that my boyfriend and I broke up before the trip, so that was a deep sadness.
This guy was like brand new.
I know, me too.
He was a brand spanking new Australian boyfriend.
We dated a year. And it was so wonderful, and I feel it's really painful that it's over, and I wish somebody would write a song about that, how that happens. Somebody write a song.
I'm sorry.
Me too. It's okay. I think it's a good thing. I read that Greg Barron book. He's not that into you.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, my gosh,
that guy dumped you?
Here's the thing.
Who would dump Maria Bamford? That is ridiculous.
No, I think he had a point. He needed to take some time for himself to think about who he was as a person, which I think is
But isn't that a lifelong project?
Well, exactly. Yeah. And if you can't do that while I'm in the other room, then not best for each other.
Who needs him?
But he's a lovely. It was a wonderful experience and positive. And I think perhaps, you know,
probably I chose him because he was unavailable. Am I right?
Yeah, probably.
My therapist thinks so.
Did your mom like him?
She liked him, although my mom always thinks, honey, is he gay? No, Mom, he's not gay. I just thought he just hasn't been married, you know, and he's a little older. Mom, I'm a little older, and I haven't been married. Well, it's okay if you're a lesbian, honey. It's okay. And once she says something's okay twice, it's not okay.
It's bad. It's bad news.
It's actually not okay.
So Australia.
Anyway, so
Singapore.
Yeah. Then next, I'm going to go on the Comedians Comedy Tour around the Midwest, and then I'm going to go to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which I'm doing very well outside of the United States.
Well, thank God. You know, I mean, you deserve to do well, and you deserve you're just one of those people that some people it's just too close to the bone for some people, or they just don't understand it. No, I'm serious.
You think so?
Some of the characters that you do, are just too, which one am I thinking about? Who's the boss one?
Yeah, do you want to hear my new joke?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I try to be a good global citizen, but then the Western Devil Yankee comes up from inside me. Uh-huh. I was going to take a couple months off, you know, maybe go help people in a different country, I don't know, sell CDs, whatever they need done. Maria, you make people laugh. That's the greatest gift in the world. You're saving people's lives. I know, but maybe I only do that 10 minutes a night. Maybe in the off hours I could make soup or dive for grenades or whatever needs to be. Okay, here's what you can do. You can buy a pair of fair trade shoes made of recycled materials. Do your part. Hey, I already have 18 pairs of shoes. Don't you think conscious neglect equals perpetration? Okay, sounds like somebody needs to take a bubble bath. Oh, God. A lavender bubble bath.
That'll do it.
It's good to calm me down.
And they love that overseas.
Yeah, well, yes. And then, America, I think we take ourselves really seriously. There isn't a lot of joking, even amongst both, there's only two sides, I guess.
Yeah.
But they're, you know.
Do you know any conservatives?
Yes.
And because we were talking about this yesterday about comedy.
Not well. Not very well.
And people in comedy, a lot of people don't really talk about politics. And I don't, it's sometimes you're surprised at who's a conservative. You're like, wow, did you just say that? And you didn't know it about them?
Yeah.
Is your family conservative?
No, they're not. I worked on a Dennis Miller show, and it turned out he flipped to conservative or whatever, and I found that extremely surprising.
Yeah, I always thought he was sort of a fraud, so it didn't really surprise me that much. He's just sort of a frightened bully. I'm sorry.
No, I don't.
What do you think the don't go away, Maria.
I know. I've gone into a shell.
No, come out of the shell. Do you want to stick around for another time?
Yes, of course. This is my one day out.
Okay. And you brought your dog?
Yes, I did.
What kind of dog is that?
She's a pug.
A pug.
Yeah.
I knew that kind of. They're snot dogs, right?
Some people call them snot dogs. Some people call them loving,
okay,
available, beautiful animals.
You can go to mariabamford.com, right, to see your funny faces and your schedule?
Yeah.
All right, so we'll be back with Maria Bamford in just a second. We'll be right back.
now he's not necessarily against eating placenta. Mark Maron.
I am kind of. It's a woman's thing. I hate to say it. I'm not being weird and exclusionary. That's just traditionally, that's a woman's thing. Our guest is Maria Bamford, comedian.
Yeah.
Do you mind that being the feminine of
sure,
comedian?
That's fine.
Stand-up comic.
As long as I get a spot.
Yeah, you got it.
Boom.
So I remember now some of the things that I was talking about when I was trying to get you to do some of the things that I like you to do. Is that you no longer, the comedians have, you don't have to do no more day jobs. That's done.
Yeah,
that's
behind you. I'm done.
You used to talk about having temp jobs.
I had temp jobs and I worked, I worked for a giant corporation. I can't say what it is, because it's Disney.
Yeah.
So, let's call it Jubla Goop. And, I think it's, yeah, it's when you have a lady boss. Like I like Emily Vess, except when she tries to act like she's your friend.
Yeah,
she calls you honey and sweetheart and girlfriend. Hey, I'm having some parties at my house this weekend, and I really want you to come. You'll meet some really cute, really available men at the door. Park their cars, take their coats, and speak only when spoken to. Hey, and I want you to take a break. You take a walk. Get out of this office and get me a latte, and it's 2% milk. You should know that by now.
Oh, no.
I see us as friends, as equals, even though I earn, 850% more than you do, and you spend 12 hours a day here stuck in this office while I drive aimlessly around Los Angeles looking for caves and tunnels from where I can call you with my cell phone.
Is that a real person?
It
is,
there
isn't it?
Some, there's some. I used to work at a studio where there was, like, ladies who were, you know, well, infinitely wealthier on Hollywood, and then and actually a little bit and then they would kind of try to act like we were buddies or something. I'm like, well, we're clearly there's a hierarchy here, and it starts somewhere where you get to leave for lunch.
Yeah.
And I don't.
And then you used to, didn't you, like, you used to do a lot of temp jobs? Did you? I remember you talking about that one.
Yeah. The worse the job is, the more excited the temporary representative seems to be about it. Hello, Maria. This is Judy from TRC Staffing in Glendale. Good morning. I have an incredible opportunity here for you today. $5 an hour, alphanumerical filing in industrial warehouse. I thought of you first. I kept expecting it to get worse. Hello, Maria. This is Judy. Tijuana, Mexico. Loading fruit trucks. You need to be there in a half hour. Corporate dress. Hose and heels. Hello, Maria. This is it. I have a feeling. Temp to perm. Thailand. You are sold into prostitution. But there is free parking.
Oh, thank God that's behind you.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. I mean, it's a day-to-day situation here, people. I'm open. I'm open to typing.
Yeah, no.
Well,
not now.
Now maybe I can teach.
Yeah, I always had that as a plan B.
Yeah, teach.
In the back of my head.
You know what?
It's gone away.
I like kids. Well, you don't even have to teach. It's just watch kids do stand-up comedy or their rendition of what stand-up comedy is. And it's just, I can't fight. It's so fun.
Do you like kids?
I do love kids. It's harder in Los Angeles. The kids are so self aware that they kind of know that there's a casting director around every corner. So they're not, don't just have fun and enjoy it. So I haven't talked to as many kids in LA. I was in an art class with some kids, and I don't know. It was just the kids are more adult like. Like this one kid was like 3 years old and he was making a three-sided triptych of, which is what a triptych is, of Brad Pitt. And because his dad had worked on The Gladiator.
Yeah.
And the kids are like, that's kind of weird. Why are you making that? He's like, I just want to make Brad Pitt. Anyway, so it's not something, you know, most kids are into SpongeBob.
I like kids that kind of, I've got, I'm getting to know my nieces and nephews. But then they get to a weird age where I find them a bit annoying. And I guess that's part of maturing, is dealing with kids' annoyingness.
What age is it that it becomes tough?
I think it's like from 6 to 20.
Yeah.
That I have a problem with them.
Yeah.
I don't have kids, and I wonder if I'm going to. I think I should. I think it'll even me out.
Oh,
is that the right way to think about them?
Well,
I want to have kids to make me a better person.
Yeah. Maybe that's. I mean, I don't know.
How many kids in your family?
There's just me and my sister. But my sister has four kids.
Oh, my God.
So
do they like you?
They're into me. I think I'm all right. Except when I'm there for longer than 4 days, then they realize that I don't have a magical quality anymore. And then they stop listening to what I had to say. Like, so they're like, T.T. Like, they call me T.T. And like, T.T. will do anything for you. And then day four, it's like, we don't have to do what you say because my mom, you're not our mom. And it's like,
how did your sister end up with four kids? I know how she ended up. I know how it happens. I'm not stupid. But is that what she wanted? Did she live
Yes. She's a doctor. Her husband's a doctor. They couldn't actually, biologically, they couldn't have kids. And so they adopted three of my nieces and nephews. And then one is a biological accident. She's nice.
But that they had, right?
Yeah. So they had. And then
I just got this image where they spilled something. Like, oh my God!
It's Josephine.
Biological accident.
I mean, not. I don't know. I'm trying to get everybody equal. Equal status on the. Sometimes.
My brother has three adopted kids as well.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah, and I think he'd just keep doing it if he had the opportunity. Just bring them on. Bring more kids in. But now, no.
My sister wants to have a fifth. She's thinking about
really?
It. She loves babies and kids and it's fun. It's a big crowd.
Yeah, but like you said, it's nice to be able to leave. Now, where are you? Do you have to plug something?
Do I have to plug it? Oh, we're gonna be at. We have the Comedians of Comedy tour, which starts out in Cleveland. Then we have various dates in Cincinnati, Detroit, Louisville, Kentucky.
Is there a website?
Yes, there is. We're on MySpace at comediansofcomedy, and then we're also at MariaBamford.com. Have my is on there tour dates.
Okay, Maria Bamford, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.
And now he's a 6.8 on the socially relevant scale, Mark Maron.
Not tonight, I'm not. Oh, let me just do it. Thank you, Jim. Tonight I'm going to just look. Let me give you some quick progressive talking points. Rumsfeld's bad. Bush is an ass. We're in trouble, man. We're in deep trouble. They're all lying. They should be put in jail, the bastards. Man, the whole country's screwed, and the world's probably ending. Climate change and environmental problems. Wow. We're in trouble, man, and we got to fix it. Now comedy. let's just keep it going. I met Kevin Kataoka in San Francisco. I think we were both younger then. We were children. Weren't we children almost?
Long ago. Yeah.
He was just up in San Francisco at Cobb's. He appeared. He's appeared on Premium Blend. He's written for Mad TV, Blind Date. He was head writer for Asia Street Comedy. On the AZN Network. I feel bad because I don't even know. Do I get AZN Network?
Yeah, you do get AZN. You should get AZN.
This is Kevin Kataoka. He's also the guy who did that benefit that we plugged on the air. That worked out. I know some of my listeners sent some money in.
And we are actually doing an addendum to that.
For Erica Doering's Eye.
Yeah. She is a fellow comic, and she recently had to undergo an eye operation, a serious eye operation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the money will go towards the medical and recovery expenses.
And this time it's going to be at the Friars Club in Beverly Hills, which I've never been to.
Right. It's the Friars of Beverly Hills, and it's a $20 suggested donation, and we have a great lineup. Can I tell the people who are
on? You can tell the people the lineup and also tell them the website.
Okay. It's... we got Greg Barrett, Doug Benson, Darren Carter, Jimmy Dore, Jimmy Schubert, emceed by Mark Cohen, and also on the show, yours truly.
Mark Maron. I'm on, and I made the cut. I made it. I know all those guys. It's going to be fun.
Yeah,
it's going to be a good night.
8 o'clock show on Monday, the 24th.
I think who's going to be on the show? Doug Benson's going to be on the show later this week.
Yeah. So it'll be good. And if you have more information on www.iunderstandyou.com.
I as in I letter.
The letter I, yeah.
I understand. I'm going to put a link to that on the site as soon as we get done with the show. So, Kevin, mm-hmm. we were having this conversation yesterday. Jim and you know each other from San Francisco before I even knew you.
We were old roommates, believe it or not.
Yeah. Are you serious? You guys lived together?
I used to take Kevin home from the Holy City Zoo.
Because he couldn't walk?
No, he was too young to drive.
No,
he was a very young comic. He was aspiring. He wanted to go on stage, but he couldn't. He had to stand outside the doorway.
Jim gives a good piggyback ride.
Aw, that's so sweet. That was back when Jim had was married to Barry, right?
Yeah.
Married to Barry?
I talked to your ex on the phone today.
Barry?
Yeah, I talked to him.
He doesn't even remember me.
Yeah, I know.
You know Barry.
He's submerged.
Obtuse, submerged.
He's obtuse, submerged, and very much up to his neck in Randy Rhoads right now.
Ooh, man.
Yeah, I know. Thanks for the image, right? Am I right? So, Kevin, we're having this conversation about ethnicity and comedy,
yeah.
And we're talking about how I think that alternative comedy is a very white undertaking.
It seems to be taken that route. Yeah.
And that there are now everything is niche marketed. Like I just wanted to be a comic, and I don't have very many options. I can either just be a regular comic or I can be a Jew.
Right.
And I don't hit the Jew too much. And you've made a choice in your career not to hit the Asian too much, eh?
I made that decision, and boy was that a mistake.
Is there still time?
I was on a show last week called the Far Easter show, so
really?
That I actually named by accident, and I didn't really. The guy that booked it said we need Tom.
Sure,
he said
Tom.
He needed a name for the show, and I just said, think of a funny name. I'm like, I don't know. When is it? He's like, Easter week. I'm like, I don't know. Far Easter. He's like, perfect. I'm like, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Because like all those shows are like, it's Menudo Mondays and White Power Wednesdays and Jews Day and Thursdays. And it's like, it never ends. So it's just like
a full Aryan weekend.
Yeah, it's just like, it's all segregated every day, you know, so it's like.
And that's the way it is now.
It's sad.
But now in terms of how was the turnout for Far Easter?
Well, that's the thing. The reason why they do it and all the clubs do it, because they just cater to a certain crowd and that crowd comes out for that particular week or night or whatever, and then, you know, the next week it's a totally different kind of crowd again.
It's good to keep everybody separate. God forbid we all get along.
Yeah, I know.
So, now, did you pack it out with Asian people?
It was, it was...
It's a big room.
It was a big room, and yeah, a lot of Asians. Actually, you know, some of the crowds were mixed, but for the most part, yeah, definitely the Asian crowds came out, so...
How do you go over with the Asians?
I think they like me.
But is there a difference in sensibility in terms of what's your background exactly?
Well, I'm Japanese. Well, you know, that's the other thing. It's like, I think with black comedy and Asian comedy, I mean, the thing with Asians, it's like, it's a very all-encompassing thing, but it's really different because there's so many different countries you're dealing with, and a lot of Asians have a history of not liking each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it is sort of strange that in America, we're all bunched together. But, you know, like, there's a totally different thing between the Japanese and Chinese and the Koreans and the Vietnamese and so forth. So it's, it's kind of an odd mix. And that's the reason why, like, I can't talk about things that are very specifically Japanese.
Do you have jokes that are?
I could write some of those things, and I have done them at gigs that are so-called Asian gigs, and then I realize three-fourths of the crowd doesn't know what I'm still talking about.
Like, what's an example?
Oh, I don't know. I could talk about, like, certain things about Japanese Buddhist churches that maybe the Japanese would totally know, or, you know, but, you know, or a lot of Japanese have Zori keychains, you know, little Japanese sandals on their keychains, but, like, you know, I might say that to a Vietnamese crowd. They don't know what I'm talking about, you know, so it's like, and it could be an Asian show. They're still looking at me, like, you know.
The baffled look of the other Asians.
Yeah, right, yeah. So I'm just like, it's not the right Asians.
Well, you used to do your... did you do your impression of your dad? I used to think that... I remember that was funny.
I would do that and, you know...
That works, I'm sure.
I would do stuff like that and...
Who else was on this show?
The incomparable Dat Phan, who's...
Who
you work with.
That was
an odd mixing, I think, when I saw that bill. You were with Dad.
I don't even know how that happened. I ended up splitting the bill with him primarily because he couldn't fill the time. I think it was what the deal was, is that it was a co-headlining situation.
Oh, okay.
And then, he was just starting out doing whatever it is that he does. I'm trying to cut down on the player hating.
No, he closed our show and did great. I mean, the crowd definitely came out to see him. That guy's got so much energy. I don't know how.
Yeah, it's a little just bundle of Asian nerves, that guy.
Oh, man. He's like, he's doing push-ups.
Yeah.
Like, you're just talking about guys that masturbate.
Yeah, that's always a bad sign on a comedy show if somebody closes with a backflip or starts doing... calisthenics of any kind.
This is before the show. He's doing push-ups.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's doing I'm like watching him, and he's like on 2 hours sleep, and he's doing push-ups. And
another bad sign. Janine Garofalo used to say that if you see, if you're backstage in a green room, there's a comic doing like vocal exercises, oh, la, 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 that's not a good sign. Yeah, it's we've got some weird kind of barometer how we judge comics. It's like, hey, you just got to go up there. You know, if you roll out of a car with bong smoke, they're like, hey, he's ready.
Yeah, that seems like the real deal. Yeah.
Who else was on it?
A woman named Tina Kim and a local guy in San Francisco named Shang Wang. Yeah, very, very funny guy, actually. He's originally from Houston, lives in San Francisco. So.
I see, I can't help but think that with that name, you've got to be funny, don't you?
I don't know.
Shang Wang? Come on.
Is that his real name? Is that Mr. Wang's real name?
Right, we're going to book him on with Andy Dick and
Mr. Shang Wang.
Some guy named Johnson. I don't know.
Shang Wang, that's a beaut. That's a good one. So, in terms of... what was this TV show you used to write for?
Asia Street Comedy. It was, AZN. It used to be called the International Channel,
mm-hmm.
and it was a cable network that showed like Al Jazeera and, you know, like movies from India,
which doesn't go over with Vietnamese people either. Oddly enough, the Al Jazeera.
But it was mostly an Asian network, so they decided to go full on Asian and they changed the call letters. Comcast bought it and they called it AZN.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, it's a totally Asian network and they decided to do original programming for a couple of years.
I've watched it. I just realized it. I watched a food show on that channel. It was like this, oh my God, it was one of the best shows I ever saw in my life. Because it was just, I don't know, I'm not sure what Asian ethnicity it was, but it was just a guy in the street talking, and then they'd go into kitchens, and they'd show close-ups of foods I'd never seen before, and slicing and dicing and bubbling urns full of stuff, and how it's made, and it just went on, and I could not identify any of the foods whatsoever, and it was so compelling, and it was so well-paced and hilarious to me that I couldn't stop watching it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but I can understand that completely because, I walk into any Asian market and I'm like, what is that?
Exactly. I used to talk about that. I used to say, when I'm eating dim sum down in Chinatown, I wonder how many times that white people go into these markets, how many times Asian people who own them have to hear white people go, what's this? What is that even made of? I mean, I don't understand.
The thing I'm always obsessed with Asians, they always put fried eggs on their foods. It's like
Koreans do. I know that a lot.
Yeah, you get a fried. I was in Japan. You get a hamburger. They put a fried egg on it. You get rice. You put fried eggs. Get a soft boiled egg. They put a fried egg on top of it.
Fried egg with a fried egg.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Japanese food. What did you grow up eating?
I grew up in my parents were born in America, so I'm like third generation, so mostly like the typical American diet, but I mean, we would eat some Japanese food, but it wasn't like we were making sushi and sitting on our knees eating all the time. It was definitely like a regular household, but just some simple Japanese dishes, nothing crazy.
Nothing weird?
Yeah. No,
that's wrong for me to say weird. See, even in my brain, would that be considered derogatory? That food's weird.
I don't know. Someone made a point recently to me, and it's funny. Everyone makes fun of people eating tripe and those kind of things, but we'll eat hot dogs. And
I know, yeah.
That's pretty much
better.
Yeah.
Don't even know what's in it. At least with tripe, you're like, isn't that guts? That's intestines, right? Tripe?
Yeah. Well, hot dog is just hollowed out guts.
Yeah, I got no idea what's in that. Yeah. So you got something you want to plug here?
The main thing I'm here is to plug that benefit on Monday night.
Which I'll be at.
That you will be at, yeah. And it's at the Friars of Beverly Hills. Can I give the address?
Sure.
It's 9900 Santa Monica Boulevard in Beverly Hills, 90210.
I will put a link to it on the site now that you gave me the website, iunderstandyou.com. And that's going to be a big night of comedy. How many seats is that place?
I believe 250.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, and if you go, I think you can get advance tickets by going to the site. So.
Is Greg Behrendt going to actually help people with their relationships during his set?
I believe it will be. by the way, it is a $20 suggested donation. I'm supposed to say that. It's a big part of the Friars.
So you can give more if you want.
Because it's a club or whatever, the Friars of Beverly Hills. So.
Okay, excellent. Kevin Kataoka, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And I'll see you at the benefit, and I'll plug it here on the show. Stay with us. We're going to do something else. Right? We're going to do short order news. Yeah?
We have time for that?
Yeah, we got time for that. And me and you, maybe we'll fight about something.
I didn't get a chance to talk about Jim's roommate habits.
Oh, well, why don't you hang out then?
You sleeping with a rag over your head?
What, you eating your brand cereal at 3 in the morning?
Okay.
Shut up!
All right. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Now he's 95% succulent cocoa. Mark Maron.
Oh, that is true. That is true. You know, Jim.
Yes, what, Mark?
What a show it's been. Oh. I feel every time we do this show, I feel like we've gone on a little journey. A little journey, my friend. I pulled this off of our blog earlier today from Progressive Spirit talking about Donald Rumsfeld not leaving, saying he never planned on leaving, Bush defending Rumsfeld. But that wasn't really what the post was about that got me, was that he says in his post, Colin Powell says everyone in the White House is on Ambien. Maybe Ambien does something to a person's conscience, nullifies the guilty feelings maybe. And isn't Ambien that Ambien? Drug? Where they have it makes people somnambulistic, somnambulists. It makes them sleepwalkers. That they've proven that people on Ambien actually get up and do things in the middle of the night and don't realize it, that it has that effect. I've taken Ambien before to sleep, but if that's true, not only is it compromising their conscience, but they could all be sleepwalking and sucking the world down with them.
They're on drugs in the White House.
We're just part of someone else's bad dream, my friend. Of course they're on drugs.
God, I thought I was part of my own bad dream.
Yeah, well, Bush is on some of the special big pharma cocktail that he has designed for him. Rumsfeld used to be the CEO of Cerl, and George H.W. Bush, his father, used to be the CEO of Eli Lilly. You don't think that he's some sort of Manchurian candidate on a special whack job cocktail to get him through this, to behave like he's behaving, to have the lack of conscience that he has and the decisions he's making? Those guys are just stubborn. They're gonna hold fast until we can change the face of the legislature, my friend, which we can do.
Do you think there's any hope for this country, Mark?
Of course there is, Jim.
Don't you think this is like Rome in the last days?
Yeah, but there was hope there. A lot of people after the fall of Rome had a pretty good time. You know, it all depends on what business you're in.
The fundamentalist Christians took over and ruined everybody's fun.
Thank you for the transition. That is exactly what we're going to be talking about tomorrow when we have our guest, who I'm thrilled about. One of the best books that anyone can buy right now is American Theocracy by Kevin Phillips. It's a very in-depth and interesting book. A lot of historical information in there. It's just about the convergence of religious right, oil money, and big debt. It talks about imperialism. It talks about the possibilities of a Christian theocracy and the movement that's been moving towards that since the Americans first got here. He's able to trace it back that far, but he's also able to sort of illuminate even the schism in the Civil War as being a religious-based war and how that created some of the red state, blue state lines. Anyways, blabbing on, but if you didn't get your politics fixed today, tomorrow you will. That's all I'm saying. A lot of emails, too, about other stuff. Also, Andy Ostroy tomorrow. He's got a blog. I'll put that up on our site, a link to it. I refer to his blog a lot. He's been charting the rise of Al Gore. He was one of the first guys to say that Al Gore is going to be running for president. Even though Al Gore hasn't admitted he's going to run for president, I think he is. I think he should.
Really?
I would vote for him.
You would vote for him? You think he's electable again? You think?
Yeah, comeback kid, dude.
Yeah, but you don't think
he won the last time?
He's just going to choke at the last minute like
he
did
won
last
the
time?
Last time. Well, I don't know.
He did choke, though, didn't he?
I don't know if he choked. He was not as exciting as he was now then, even if he did choke. I think he's got a lot of juice. I think he's, as far as politicians go, I think he's one of the better ones. I think he would be a good president. I'd like to have him. I would vote for him. I don't know who else there is in terms of Democrats. Feingold. Russ Feingold, I think, should run. I don't know if he's going to run as president or as a vice president. We'll see. We'll see what happens there.
I haven't been excited about a candidate since Jerry Brown ran for president.
I haven't been excited about a candidate either. We got some emails, too, that I keep putting off that I haven't
Yeah, what about those?
Read.
What's happening with those?
Well, it's nothing. You know, people, just this one woman, who's another person who said that I was suckered by Betty Martini and the aspartame thing. And she claims that I was a sucker because she's a physician. And even if there was some pseudoscience, there's enough research for me to know that aspartame is bad for you, all right?
Well, you know,
I know that.
The thing with physicians, they don't know. They know virtually nothing about nutrition.
Are you kidding? My dad's a physician. No kidding.
They take like one undergraduate course on nutrition before they.
My dad is born again. Now he's like he's very much into the nutrition thing. He never was, but now he's very aware of all that stuff. So look, I know a lot of things happen in the world today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed. So here's tonight's edition of the Short Order News. President Bush today refused to rule out nuclear strikes against Iran if diplomacy fails to curb their atomic ambitions. Look, folks, mostly because the way things have been going, the guy who started our Wow. Can I just go back? President Bush today refused to rule out nuclear strikes against Iran if diplomacy fails to curb their atomic ambitions. Mostly because with the way things have been going, the guy who started Armageddon has always got going for him. George Ryan, the former Republican governor of Illinois, who drew international notice by declaring a moratorium on the death penalty in his state, has been convicted in a sweeping federal corruption case. The disgraced politician, no longer qualified for office, will probably live out the rest of his days as a Chicago mayor. The state of Texas is halting its program of arresting drunks in bars. After all, being a drunk from Texas is the first step to the White House. Those are the short order news for today. I feel like I rushed through them after I stumbled on that first one. We'll have to have more time on the other side than I thought we would, so now we've got to talk some more. A lot of people are, which I don't mind doing, because there's a lot of important things to talk about.
Oh, I'm glad you said that.
Some people think that we're having real problems, you and I. Are we?
What do you mean? Define real.
I don't know, man. I mean, some people think, like, you know, the tension's interesting. Other people, like, they're concerned about
well, they want a love fest here? I mean, they want, look, you know, we're not butt boys to each other. That's all I'm saying. There's nothing wrong with a little healthy debate. That's what the progressives are supposed to do.
Yeah.
Have healthy debates.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, I mean, is it personal, or do we, you know, we're not supposed to, we don't have to like each other. I guess we're tolerance is what it, that's what being a progressive is about, and I think that's what we're experiencing. You and I are tolerating.
I don't think you dislike me.
No.
I don't know if you like me.
Yeah.
But I can't tell, because you're a hard-to-read guy.
Am I really?
Yeah, you're very hard for me to read, yeah.
Well, you're like the only one then, so that must mean I have some problems with you.
No, just everybody else is just walking on eggshells going, woo-hoo, behind your back. But, I know what you
I don't think
really...
I do that. I don't think I'm that kind of guy. I'm usually... Man, you know what? I'm not sure if I do like you. I mean, we're working on it. Tolerance is what we're working on.
Tolerance.
Tomorrow, Kevin Phillips and, you know, other people. I just had him right in front of me. Andy Ostroy and the comedian Jill Kushner. Good night, sheeple. There's nothing wrong with masturbating. It's nothing.